Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Pneumaticos. I am your host, Dr. Josiah Rich. And this morning's episode is entitled, The Divine Warrior Fights on Your Behalf When the World Will Not. I'm going to be reading today from Genesis chapter 1. And we're going to be considering again the unique perspective of the biblical documents with regard to the person of God. God is known by several different names in the Hebrew text. And each name that is given of God in the Hebrew text allows insight into, or a different insight into, his character. That is his nature. And so what we learn from the Hebrew text primarily is that the divine nature is not static. The divine nature, as revealed in the Hebrew scriptures, is not Greek. The divine nature, or the divine essence, is dynamic. The name that God reveals to Moshe, or Moses, in Exodus 3:14, which has been transliterated as, I am that I am, is really a name that should be, or should have been, transliterated as, I will be what I will be. And so, God reveals himself to human beings in terms of relationship. And his presence within our lives. It is imperative to understand that the divine essence is dynamic. And so, this is revealed to us in Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. In beginning, or in the beginning, there is no article in the Hebrew before the word beginning. In beginning, Elohim created bara, the heavens, shamayim, and the earth. Now, the earth was formless and empty, and darkness, Koshek, was over the surface of the roaring deep. Please get that compelling picture. the roaring deep, so that we can be free in reading the text, so that we can understand the very powerful and dynamic activity that the writer wants to communicate to us. Let me say at this point that it is well known that the Genesis document has both prominent Babylonian and Egyptian features. And I want to emphasize that because I think it's very important that, yes, these are the biblical documents, and I want you to understand the nature of the Semitic environment from which this document, this unique document, emerged. So we go on. Darkness was over the surface of the deep. In Hebrew, the word deep here is tihon. And the Spirit of God, Ruach Elohim, was hovering over the waters. So we have a picture here of vast, impenetrable darkness, Koshek. In the original text, there is also the understanding that the earth itself was encased in ice. It was frozen, if you will. And so therefore, in verse 2, we have, now the earth was formless and empty. And so this rules out the condition that there was any life going on. It is important to note that the Genesis writer assumes the being of God. He does not offer an argument for what has been termed the existence of God. Divine essence predates creation. Creation is never looked upon as an extension of divine essence. Divine essence is apart from creation, and yet the Creator is seen in his creative activity, down to the coats on viruses, which are triangular, down to the very semi-permeable membrane of cells, and even what we call the machinery, the inner machinery of cells, the energy that cells generate for life, adenosine triphosphate, all these marvelous, if you will, mechanisms. that God has set in place. Are an intrinsic part of divine activity. It is important to note that we are given privy in Genesis 1 to extraordinary power, power that is beyond our ability to comprehend. And note very carefully that God's power predates any human power, any human political system that is maintained by a force of arms and manipulative economic policies and treaties. The fact that God is prior to these things is imperative for us. What we are going to see in Genesis chapter 1 is the establishment of order. We will see divine essence at work. We will see the essential being of God in his creative activity. We will note that God does not ask permission to undertake his creative activity. God does what he wills, and who can say, "What doest thou?" So we observe in verse 3, and Elohim said, "Let there be light," or in Hebrew, "light be," "light was." We see the synchronicity of word and act, or word act synchronicity. At the beginning of verse 3, we have the connective particle and, or the conjunction and, I should say, which tells us that there is sequential order inherent in the text. Also, one might note that in the Hebrew text, it does not read, "In the beginning, God created," it reads, "Elohim." The first word in the Hebrew text, the first noun, is Elohim, God. El is an ancient term for God that the Hebrew theologian adopted. El means the strong one in Hebrew thinking. And in Hebrew pictograms, it is represented by the bull or the ox. Elohim is the strong one of authority. The other Hebrew picture or Hebrew pictogram that represents Elohim is the staff, the shepherd's staff, to lead it to God. So we have two Hebrew pictograms that represent Elohim, the strong one of authority. Pictogram of the ox or bull, the pictogram of the staff. The I am, once again, at the end of the word Elohim, represents a compound unity. Verse 3, and God said, "Light be," light was. And verse 4, God saw that the light orb was Tob, full of goodness. Tob in Hebrew. And he separated the light from the darkness. And God called the light day or yom, and the darkness he called night. I'm not going to get into all the arguments that yom here does not represent 24-hour solar day, but yom can represent an enormous period of time. The text does not seem to support the idea that yom or day represents a large or extended period of time or eons of time. The text does not bear that interpretation. Also, we're not going to talk about Archbishop James Usher and his understanding of creation. There are some limitations, inherent limitations, in what he says that I don't want to get into at this point. Now, please note at the end of verse 5, there was evening and there was morning the first day. So, which is very different from the Western understanding of the light and evening cycle. We say day and evening. Hebrew text reads evening and morning. Their day began at sundown. We see this in the New Testament as well. And there was evening and there was morning the first day. God lays the foundation for us to view him in a very particular manner. The text affirms divine personality. The text affirms that divine personality or essence precedes creation. The text renounces atheism. Which states that there is no God and is an amazing assumption to hold on to a theism. But to each his own. Pantheism, evolutionism, the proponents of evolutionary theory have yet to produce anything resembling transitional life form. But the drawings are very nice. Very interesting to look at. And polytheism, which is a belief in many gods, is also renounced here in the text. Also, the eternity of mass energy is dismissed. And also, fatalism is dismissed as well. We will see that the human being, the Adam, his name was not Adam. Adam was not a proper name. As created from the hand of God, he was the Adam. He was also called Ish, and his wife was called Isha. And also, she was called Kavah. She was the mother of all living. One never finds the word Eve in the text. One never finds that at all. I want to set this foundation in our understanding, because it is imperative to understand the doctrine of the divine warrior. In the book of Genesis, as we move through the book of Genesis, we see something very interesting take place. In Genesis chapter 4, we see the first fratricide, or the killing of one's brother. Cain, whose name means possession or a spear, takes the life of his brother Abel, whose name means vapor or breath. Cain is judged by God. Cain he goes off, and he too begins to have offspring, and we see something new in the human family. In verse 25 of Genesis 4, we read, Adam lay with his wife again, and she gave birth to a son, and named him Seth, saying, God has granted me another child in place of Abel, since Cain killed him. Seth also had a son, and he named him Enosh. At that time, men began to call him the name of the Lord. Now, Enosh is an interesting term in that the word means incurable, the incurable one. So there is something going on in the human condition. And the writer swiftly moves into chapter 5. In chapter 4, we are given a lyric poem about an individual by the name of Lamech, who murders a young man for a wound or a wrong. He takes this individual's life. So we see something going on in the human family. The writer moves he is swift to move and to show us evidence that something dramatic has taken place within the human family. Indeed, in Genesis 3, he shows us the picture of the Nakash, the Shining One, who moves into the human home, who seduces the wife of the Adam with his discussion or with his questions about God. The first attack is on the human, is upon the home of the human family. Please keep that in mind. Then, at the end of chapter 4, we have this lyric poem about the murder of an individual. And then we read in verse 26 that Seth, the godly one, had a son, and he named him Enosh, which means incurable. In chapter 5, we have the first cemetery, and we see that human longevity is cut down. And we read several times Genesis 5, and he died. It occurs 8 times. He died. We move on. At the end of chapter 5, then we have Enoch, who walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. Then we have the coming of Noah. In verse 32, after Noah was 500 years old, he became the father of Shem, Ham, and Japheth. These 3 sons will become the progenitors of the human family
talking about family that will spread throughout the earth after the planet has, or the surface or the topography of the earth has been refashioned for their time. Very interesting. Noah's name means rest. It's that Jesus, or Jesus, is our Noah. Jesus is our rest. In chapter 6, we have a very interesting account of the breaking up or the destruction of the planet through moral hubris and moral disregard for God. The world, once again, we read in chapter 6 that God saw to leaven now the earth was corrupt in God's sight and was full of violence. God saw how corrupt the earth had become, for all the people on earth had corrupted their ways. So God says to Noah, I am going to put an end to all things, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. That's because of Ma. God is going to bring in the Mabul, what is commonly called the flood. And the Mabul originally denoted the heavenly or the upper part of the cosmic ocean. We read in this account that the fountains of the great deep are broken up, and this is none other than the primeval sea. The primeval sea. The deluge in the time of Noah is directly connected with creation. It is, in fact, the reverse of it. The flood, or the Mabul, is the creation. It is the ontological collapse of antediluvian reality. God is bringing an end to the world and its corruption, its activity, its morose and destructive nature. God is bringing an end to the world that is filled with the power of man to ruin, manipulate, and hurt. The divine warrior has taken up his bow, and he is at war with mankind. We will see at the end of the great Mabul, or flood, that the divine warrior hung up his bow, and the rainbow is a picture of that fact. In chapter 9, verse 13, God says, I have set my rainbow in the clouds, and it will be out of the covenant between me and the earth. Whenever I bring clouds over the earth and the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will remember my covenant between me and you and all living creatures of every kind. Never again will the waters become a flood to destroy all life. Whenever the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will see it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and all living creatures of every kind on the earth. So God said to Noah, this is the sign of the covenant I have established between me and all life on the earth. My name is Dr. Josiah Rich. Beloved, have a wonderful day.